This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Hundreds of movement leaders, activists, organizers, funders, and journalists gathered in Atlanta, Georgia in June 2023 at a Light, Align, Arise, an invitation-only conference on reparations organized by the Decolonizing Wealth Project. As the conference's media partner, Yes Media spoke with more than a dozen prominent organizers, activists, and leaders, among them actor and activist Kendrick Sampson. Known for his work on Insecure and The Vampire Diaries, he's been active with Black Lives Matter and is a founder and president of Build Power, a nonprofit organization that engages with athletes and entertainers to use their platforms to advance radical social change. Kendrick Sampson, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course.
What do reparations mean for you, and what does it mean to be in this space where there's a historic gathering legitimizing the idea of reparations?
Reparations to me is just kind of a given. It's something that I think a lot of time, energy, and money has been spent to convince us that we are not deserving of something very simple, which is repair. If harm has been done to us, if damage has been done, it has to be repaired. If you're not healing, if you're not repairing, then you're continuing to live with whatever the effects of that damage is. And if we know who's at fault, which we do, we can hold them accountable. More than anything, if I could summarize it in a word, reparations is healing. And you have to have a part. There are physical and material parts to healing. It's not an apology. Apologies, and we ain't even got that. But the apologies start the healing process, maybe mentally, if it's sincere and connected to a plan of action that is intended toward healing from that harm done.
So the harm has taken so many forms. It's historic, but it's also ongoing. And you're in an industry where there has been a lot of harm. There still is a lot of harm being done in terms of stereotyping, in terms of furthering a view, particularly of Black people. It's changing a little bit. What is your assessment of the role your industry has played and how you see yourself within that industry?
Is it changing? Because it kind of seems like it's changing back. Like it was held accountable for a brief second, and then they were like, magic and imagination. Oh, y'all are talking about reimagining? Let's reimagine your paycheck. Let's reimagine DEI with no employees. Let's reimagine a Black vertical that is stripped of all actual employment and infrastructure, but is still used to attract a Black audience. Like, we're going back to, I'm seeing all white male producing, directing, starring teams. And it's, even in this concept of colorblind casting for me, we're not in high school where you cannot find people. It's not a church production where you're like, oh, we can't find the one specific character. You don't have an excuse. It's Hollywood. Yeah. Like, you can go anywhere in the world so to find the authentic people. I think that a lot of it, that particularly is damaging. The destruction of the contracts, not honoring contracts and streaming and all of that kind of stuff. The writer strike right now, damage is being done. People's overall deals and first look deals are being cut, and funding for mentorship programs and such are being underfunded or defunded completely. And that has a direct impact on the infrastructure for storytelling for Black people and the narratives that replace it, which are going to come from somebody else, which are not going to be holistic. It's not going to be authentic. It's not even going to have a genuine perspective of our community, and therefore is going to tell something that's inauthentic and usually harmful and damaging. And then we got to go demand more repair. Yeah. So Hollywood has a history since the first blockbuster being Birth of a Nation and being screened at the White House. Mm-hmm. Hollywood has a duty. Hollywood has a responsibility to repair a lot of the damage that it's done. And honestly, we're over here fighting for budgets and money and the right for or the worthiness of our stories. Like, and you have mediocre white stories being told all the time and people able to fail up. When are we going to be able to fail up? Where them film funds at? Because all them little stories that come out that nobody saw or that people saw and were like, this is trash. That person, if they're black, that's the end of their career. If they're white, they're like, well, he didn't do so well, but at least he handled that size budget. So let's give him this size budget and let's see if he learned from his last mistake. And then that one's trash. And then they're like, well, let's give him just the trash genre. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it baffles me sometimes and is really, really frustrating because I'm seeing people, storytellers that I know and respect and love, that have way more skin in the game than me, that I've been learning from. I'm seeing them be attacked and underfunded, and it's sad because I see the direct correlation between the void of stories and the harmful stories that are going to come because of that.
So for you specifically, do you hope that reparations can also take the form of being given the reins of storytelling in a mass media?
That's a necessary part of reparations.
Yeah, okay.
A shift in power is a necessary part of reparations. You can't repair with the people that committed the harm still in the positions of power. If you have people who've been abusing or ignoring the impact of the systems and just accepting things as they are, I don't want that type of leader at the helm of anything. I need a leader who's going to be at the top that has the proper ideology and background to understand and be able to relate on an authentic level to the people that are running the machine, and that they shouldn't be defined by profit. They should be defined by wellness. The wellness of the company cannot be apart from the consideration of the wellness of the people that are working there. And there has to be, in order for that to happen, you have to do a whole restructuring. You got to build a new system. People should not have to come all the way across the United States or the world, really fighting for visas and all kinds of things to come to Hollywood for this hope that maybe one day I can be the exception in that white story. Maybe one day I could be the token. And maybe one day, even better, they'll give me my own story, you know? Well, you know, for lack of better terms, that it's been too much. That's my story. There's too many stories like that. And we deserve for that infrastructure to be spread across all of our communities so that everyone has access to high quality, healthy storytelling that we have autonomy over so that it can be well.
And it's not just about showcasing perfection, right? I mean, what you were saying earlier about when do we get the chance to fail up? The stories that are being told, we don't often get the full well-roundedness and complexity and three-dimensionality of characters of color, and particularly black folks, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. It's a part of the dehumanization process. Mm. It's telling stories or using them as support for a white story, right? And there's always an excuse of, well, I mean, if you think about it, like, white people of European descent are the smallest population. 600 million, something like that. And even if you think about the excuse that it has to be universally relatable, which is not a thing. You generalize, then you take away the specificity and people can't relate. Mm. There's universality in specificity. That's one of the key tenets of art, like in storytelling. There's universality in specificity, in exploring the specific parts of yourself and who you are and identifying that and showing who that holistic person is, who that person is holistically. You know, understanding their full being. But so often when you center a white person who is not the majority, right, by any means, got over a billion black people, 2 billion in Asia, you got melanated people all over the world, yeah. 1 million indigenous folks, brown, like, and then 600 million from different countries, maybe, of European descent. It's not universal. It's not a universal experience. So even that logic of it has to be a universal story does not work. People, you would bring them in so many more audiences if you understood that more people can relate to somebody who looks like me or you than the white person that they've centered. And then when you talk about, I talk in these rooms all the time where I'm like, okay, well, because they're worried about representation instead of meeting the material needs of people and actually shifting culture, they're like, well, then we could just make this role black. And as hard as people fought in the industry to open up white casting directors' minds to the fact that a character could be, that the protagonist could be something that is not white, and expanding their thoughts behind that in their imagination, which sucks that we had to do that, but then you have the job now of understanding that it's not going to be the same experience as that white character.
Right. You can't just swap them out.
You can't just swap them out. You have to have a whole political understanding. And that's where colorblind casting comes from. Oh, don't worry about it. Everybody, you could have any kind of anything, and everybody's anything, and we're related, but it doesn't matter about the backgrounds, so that we don't have to reconcile the political part of it. We don't have to reconcile the social part of it. Yeah. That is highly damaging. And I talk about it all the time. If you make this character black, then now you have to worry about this becoming a magical Negro narrative because it's servicing the protagonist. Oh, well, that's just a service of the story, three-act structure or storytelling or whatever. Yeah, you're right. And now you have something to consider.
Yeah.
If you need to make that person black, then you need to bring in black writers. Then you need to make, you get what I'm saying?
Right.
And that part, they don't want to do.
You're right. Writers write what they know.
Yeah.
And if you want a black character in a film, you gotta at least bring a black writer who knows how to write that character.
Yeah. But they don't want to spend that money. They don't want
right.
to be liable for, you know, being an incorrect interpretation. They don't want to do the studying that it takes to understand if they're hiring the right person.
Here we are talking about, we're at this conference around reparations. We've been asking our guests this one question, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it as well. It's kind of an odd question, but if you had a magic wand that you could wave to make one thing happen today to further the cause of reparations that's dear to your heart, what would it be?
Funding. Give a... Because I could tell you a whole bunch of people that will tell that story right.
Mm.
And they need the money to do it.
Right.
Because the truth is that the stories that we need to be told, so we launched Build Power Productions last year, and we committed to telling the stories nobody wants to tell, that everybody's scared to tell. we don't know how we gonna get all them things made. We're gonna do it, but we don't know how. You know why? Because it's not just, it's not the people that don't want that story to be told. I've heard, when I first got to LA 2007, Danny Glover was trying to get a story made about Toussaint Louverture. He's been trying still. That was, he had been a decade into trying to get that thing made, and just a play, and then a movie, like 10 years in when I got to LA. Yeah. That's Danny Glover. You know what I'm saying? I ain't got no Danny Glover clout. I'm not Danny Glover, you know, but I'm over here like connecting folks and seeing where those resources are going to come from, because they're not going to come from the institutions that benefit from covering up those stories. Yeah. If we show the blueprint for revolution, if we show the blueprint for healing, then we have to upend the oppressive systems. Right. And I think that people understand that and are scared of it when they benefit from those systems.
And it used
not
to,
I think I know.
It used to be that they would always make the argument around money, right? We would make diverse films, et cetera, if they were only profitable. And then they did, and then they were profitable. So it was never really about profitability, was right. it?
And then one of they homies went out there and did the McKinsey report that shows that they're missing out on $10 billion. Mm-hmm. Minimum for or more. Was it 10 billion, Rodney?
I think it's...
Yeah, 10 billion.
You're talking about the loss to the economy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's on the level of trillions.
Yeah, by not supporting our stories. And it's like, you know, that was white people doing the assessment. If we did the assessment, I guarantee you it'd be a lot more than they came up with. Yeah. We know it a little bit more intricately. So they're doing damage to themselves, and that's been a narrative since the beginning of this country. The beginning of this country was convincing poor white people that one day they might participate in some sort of the profit or the dream that America might be if they accept the oppression of black people and participate in it. They're still poor, still suffering out there. But doing it and working against and voting against their own health and wellness in order to have the potential one day and saying, well, at least I can hit them and not get away with it. At least I have a little bit of power. It's like, you know, that person at the door that you hate, you know what I'm saying? It's just the gatekeeper, and they're like, you know what, I'm gonna make you suffer before you come into this room. They're still making $10 an hour as a security person, but they're like, nah, man, I'ma use this time. They've been trying to convince poor folks and even people within our community to turn against each other for those reasons, for participation in crumbs. And I think if we break that down and understand and spread the gospel of the repair that we're owed and deserve, there will be a cultural shift, and the demand for reparations will be heard in a more it will have more gravitas. It'll have a bit more gumption, and be heard in the halls of whatever lawmaking body owes us, which is all of them. So.
I love the cultural shift aspect of it. Okay, one last question, if you don't mind me squeezing in. I've seen you often on the front lines of protests in the streets of LA, especially, you know, in the summer of 2020 and beyond, and even before that, saying Black Lives Matter and protesting racist police violence. How do you link the demand for reparations to the problem of police violence in your mind, and also, How do we start using, or how do you want to use mass media and film as a way to change the narrative on issues around police violence in particular?
So Cori Bush kind of did it for us. She just released this bill, and 14 trill, and you better name all of the victims of police violence, because it's a vestige of slavery. It's slave catching. It's slave catchers. There was no separation. It was a direct transition from slave catchers into police, and especially in the South. and you have, you know, and it's used to protect the things that have been stolen, to protect the oppressors from the oppressed. I mean, that's right. really what it, right. How it's been used. And so there is a direct correlation. If we're talking about reparations, and there's been no break for Black people since the transatlantic slave trade, excuse me. So there's been no break. You had that, and you had slavery, and you had Jim Crow, and you had Disney, and now you have the prison industrial complex, and you have slave catchers running around in our streets, killing us with badges on. That's state-sanctioned violence. That is state-approved violence. And so there has to be, one, repair for that harm done for those families, and not just, and not that they have to sue the government and go 5 years while family members stress out and die because of the trauma that they're experiencing and the mental health that they suffer from because it's being attacked after they've been harassed by police and all of this. It should be automatic and show that it's pervasive, not just from the person who dies, but the whole family and the community suffers. And so that damage is still being done. And I think that as far as the way that we want to use filmmaking as a tool to shift culture, to understand even the connection of slavery to police, and so that it doesn't seem like an outlandish thing that's mm-hmm. Included in that bill, or that mental health care infrastructure mm-hmm. funding is included in that. Black people, if you think about the trauma we've experienced because of the government, directly because of the government, you don't even have to go to corporations and white people in our neighborhoods. If you go just literally directly from the government, if we're looking at it, just the connection, the direct connection to that, and the mental health care infrastructure that should be built, and the fact that that might seem like a wild and radical concept, but if you look at just the harm from the government alone, the funding should be there for the repair. If we're not even talking about financial reparations or anything like that, if we're just talking about the concept of repair, if we're talking about the concept of healing, the government should care if they harm somebody that they mm-hmm. should heal it. That the government of all people should be like, okay, we've done some damage, we made a mistake, we need to fix this immediately. That hasn't ever been the case. You have to go through all types of litigation and then go up against the people that created the system of the legal system, right. And interprets the legal system. you have to sue them. You have to convince them. That's wild. It should be literally that we have unlimited funding for Indigenous and Black folks in this country. It should be free. It should be free, and it should be the highest quality healthcare, literally because of the physical harm that's been done. And that could just start there, right? Hey, that was traumatizing. I know that, you know, even the summer of 2020 and the bill that y'all should foot for that, the repair that y'all need to do because you sanctioned all that violence against people who were protesting state-sanctioned violence. That alone is a big bill. That's 14 trillion. Right. The bill is not going down. It's not going to get smaller at any point. It's only compiling. So the highest bidder right now is going to get the cake. Y'all might want to do it now before it gets higher. I do believe that we can incorporate the idea and the concept of, talk about a green energy playbook. There's this dope green energy playbook, and they talk about like how to get people more acclimated to climate solutions and solutions for healing the earth and Mother Earth. And they're like, you know, do things as simple as in a film, you have two characters that only use reusable water bottles, you know, things like that, where you make it cultural. You don't ever have to have a line like, well, let me get my reusable water bottle, right, because, you know, the climate has been, you don't have to give a whole political education in a scene.
You normalize it.
You can normalize it and socialize the concept of repair, that if there's harm, that's accountability. And a country that was founded on violence and a key tenet of that, of its operation, is a lack of accountability. It's not ever going to come back and exemplify and be the leader or the bigger person.
Right. You have to make them.
Yeah, you have to demand it. And you have to, in order to demand it, you have to know you deserve it.
Mm.
So we have to socialize that concept, that we deserve repair.
Right. Thank you so much, Kendrick Sampson. Is there a website that people can check out to follow the work you're doing outside of your acting career, but the activist work
Hell
you're doing?
Hell yeah. Buildpower.com, BLDPWR.com, and BLDPWR on Instagram and all them other things. But yeah, BLDPWR.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with actor and activist Kendrick Sampson, founder and president of Build Power, during a recent conference on reparations in Atlanta, Georgia, produced for Yes Media, where I work as the racial justice editor. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.